Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
For the longest time now, I had been looking for the perfect way to serve my agave spirits. Be it a vessel, a copita, a glass, the shape didn't really matter. What mattered was that this vessel was equally as stunning as the agave spirits I was serving. So I just didn't want something that was beautiful. I also wanted something that talked about Mexico in its full glory. And finally, after many years, our friends at mezcalforlife.com saved me. They found what I wanted. This came in the shape of marble glasses. I've always loved marble because it's the one thing that is going to last you your lifetime. Even if you have dogs or kids, it is virtually impossible to break them, though you can achieve it. But most importantly, I think there are very few materials that can show with such precision the place and the artisans that were involved into making this. Every time I see one of these glasses, I have to imagine the mountain that was cracked open in order to extract this marble, and then the process in which the artisan thought, yes, this is what I want. This is what I think is beautiful, and this is what I want to share with the people that are coming to my town. So if there's any chance that you are as excited about marble as I am, I recommend you to go visit mezcalforlife.com. That is, again, mezcalforlife.com, and I really hope you get to find your perfect copita.
I'm Lou Bank.
I am Chava Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the award-winning, critically acclaimed podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
And today, dear listeners, dear agave road trippers, how do we call people?
How much is that doggy what? In the window?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the one thing
Agave Road Trip goes to the dogs.
The one thing that will not prompt a fight against me or between Lou and I. The one thing. Well, actually, I do have a few comments about this, but.
Yeah, I suspect this won't be as, it won't go down as easy as you expect.
No, it won't be easy. So, first of all, like, what are we talking about today, Lou? You're better at explaining things quickly and sharply.
We are talking about Maguey Mutts. We are talking about Palenque Pups. We are talking about Fido de Mezcal. We are talking about, we've had an episode that explains how much agave spirit you can bring back with you into the USA, right? Mm-hmm. But we've not talked about how many dogs you can bring back. So this episode is like, this is pandering. This is totally pandering to people who love dogs. This is how do you get a dog back from Mexico? All I can speak to is the USA. I don't. If you want to bring it back to Europe, sorry, you're on your own. You want to bring it to Canada, I can't help you. To the USA, now that I know something about.
Wait. I do want to make a point before even you start giving all the technical details and your grand expertise in the theme. Why not cats?
Cats? Well, cats you can get up here in the US, but we don't have any dogs.
Come on.
You know, Louis. So I'll tell you, it's funny. I very, very rarely see cats in Mexico.
Because you go to bed at 9 p.m.
Is that when the cats come out? I keep dog hours. I didn't know there were dog hours. We've seen some beautiful little cats. But, like, I can think of, I've probably seen 24 cats in all of my trips to Mexico.
Really?
Yeah, and that's maybe because I've seen thousands of dogs and they eat the cats. That's entirely possible.
I'm not liking where this is going. I love the cats. I prefer the cats.
I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with a cat, but I'm saying like dogs I see all over Mexico, and the dogs are...
Yeah, because you buy sausages to feed dogs. It's not like you feed dogs.
Hang on
a
second.
You go stalk the dogs.
This is not a chicken or egg thing. This is very simple. It's not like I was walking around with raw hot dogs, and that's why the dogs...
You do.
It's not like I was walking around with the raw hot dogs, and that's why the dogs came to me. I walk around with raw hot dogs because I see so many stray dogs. In fact, when Connie and I first started visiting Mexico in 2008, the first trip we took to Oaxaca, I didn't see a single person walking a dog on a leash. Not one. Every dog I saw was either wandering the streets, and you know, maybe it was somebody's dog, but I don't think so. So either walking the streets or they were up on a roof protecting a house, and that was it. That's it.
That is very true, though. So wait, and this is something that I struggle a little bit understanding sometimes, is you guys love in the US of A to adopt dogs, right? That's a very well-established thing. Like, I've even seen, like...
As opposed to what?
Well, I've seen, like, even cartoons in the New Yorker where there's two dogs talking and one dog tells the other, like, she was a rescue. Like, there's a bunch of jokes.
Wait, what's the joke there? I don't get it.
Well, the dog is saying that the owner was a rescue.
Okay, I get that. Yeah, I like that.
So it's almost sort of a joke these days, or am I wrong? I'm just reading like American culture from a distorted lens.
I don't think it's a joke about rescuing dogs. I mean, like during the pandemic in particular, literally so many of the dog pounds around the USA ran out of dogs.
People, so it is a joke.
Well, that wasn't a joke. Like that's how we managed our stress, was we got all these dogs.
And babies, but whatever.
No, like it's funny. Like when you talk about like the baby boom, this was definitely the puppy boom.
Okay. But I think that the important part about this episode is not what I understand or what I think about this. It's how do you find a puppy that you love in Mexico, in a palenque, in the streets of Oaxaca, in the streets of Durango or Torreón, and you are able to bring it back to your house in the United States, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So I found out the hard way how to go about this process. Connie and I, as you say, we walk around Mexico, almost always have some form of raw meat with us. I guess hot dogs aren't really raw, but some form of easily carried meat that we can feed to dogs. Sometimes it's bacon, sometimes bologna. And we went to the Zocalo in Oaxaca, and just, you know, like we do on so many trips, just started throwing hot dogs out to dogs. And this one beautiful dog came up to us. And normally they're sort of like goldfish in that you'll feed them and they'll keep eating as long as you keep throwing them hot dogs. I've literally gone through two whole packs, like 16 hot dogs on a single dog.
Goldfishes? I thought you were going to say hamsters, but sure. Goldfishes also.
Well, hamsters do that?
Well, hamsters have like very big cheeks, so they can store a lot of them.
Okay, that's cute. I like that. Well, so, you know, so we're used to these dogs just eating. As much as you will give, they will take. This dog came over to us, and she just had two hot dogs and then laid down at our feet. And right? And I was like, oh. And then people would come over to us, and if they got too close, she'd start growling at them. Got even closer, she'd get up and bark at
them. She was protecting Mexicans from gringos.
Is that what she was doing? Like keeping
a
bubble around
us? Yeah,
that's
what she was doing. It's like...
And then, like, it came time we had to go and meet some folks for lunch. We start walking out of the Zocalo, and initially she was following close behind us and barking at people who got too close. And then she figured out our trajectory and jumped in front of us and started clearing a path. She literally attacked a guy's crotch who didn't move out of our way. And that was it. Connie was like, okay. Like, and, you know, we already had two dogs. We couldn't bring another dog back for ourselves. But she's like, we got to bring this dog home. We got to find this dog a home.
Lord.
And it's like a longer story than that. I won't go into too many of the details, though it does involve Lalo. But what we found out was to get to get this dog, who at the time was probably about 45 pounds. Her name is Kahlo. She's so beautiful. Named after the Zocalo and Frida Kahlo. Kahlo. Yes. To get this puppy dog back to the U.S., you have to get these tests done and you have to get her these shots. And the key to this, so the, you know, you've got to find your veterinarian who can do all the paperwork, give the shots, do the tests, fill out the paperwork so that you can bring the dog in, right? Uh-huh. But here's the trick part. This is the hard, there's two hard parts. So one piece of it is that after the test, there's a 30-day waiting period.
Oh, so you have to find a home for that dog for 30 days if you're not staying that long in Mexico.
That is exactly right. Jesus. If you find this dog on the last day of your trip, you're like, what am I going to do? I have to find someone to home this dog for 30 days. Otherwise, the dog wanders around and everything is null and void and you maybe never see the dog again, right? Yeah, yeah. So we found in Oaxaca, south of Centro, just south of Centro, there's this training facility where they were teaching dogs to be guard dogs. And so you would put your dog in this facility for anywhere from 30 to 90 days to be trained by professionals to be a guard dog. I'm sorry?
To attack people, to be an
police
dog. To find drugs, to find explosives, to...
Or to follow specific commands, like that, right? And so Kahlo was in there, in essence, like she was in ROTC in this military training, but her job was just like, and they taught her a few things, but her job was really just to lay around and get fat. And so it cost us, I want to say it was something like $600 to keep her in there for what amounted to about 40 days.
That's the whole salary of a person working full time in Mexico, right?
Oh yeah, no, I realize that. Well, look, when you fall in love with a dog, you don't question the amount. I would, I flew down there for trips, not to see her. Like I had trips planned before we ever found her. And I would take her out for an afternoon and we'd go and get steak together and run around. And it was adorable. It's like I had little doggy dates, a couple of doggy dates between.
Did you have somebody following you taking pictures? Dressed like a charro?
I gotta say, she was so smart. They let her in at the restaurant, which was really cool. And I ordered two steaks and like they, you know, the little bench, little table, and she was sitting on the bench next to me and they put the two steaks down. And as soon as they did, she ate hers immediately and she didn't touch mine. She was so smart. Oh, she's such a smart girl. Anyway, so like there's that. But then here's the other thing you got to think about when you're getting these dogs is if you fall in love with a 40-pound dog, I get it. As we did, you're going to do what it takes. Okay. What you really want to do is fall in love with a tiny puppy. Because with a tiny puppy, you can bring that puppy on board as carry-on. Or like, it doesn't even have to be a puppy. I guess like there are lots
of... Yes, a small dog you can... But they make a mess. Well, like...
Chihuahuas.
Chihuahua.
Well, you put them in a little container, like a tiny dog is ideal because then it's just carry on and it doesn't cost you a lot of money. It's like $50, I think, to carry one on. Right. But if you've got to check a dog, as we had to do with Kahlo, you have to find a freight forwarder, which you can do like generally through the airline. You tell them, okay, I've got a dog. I'm going to check the dog, $200. And then they find a freight forwarder who can put all the paperwork in place. But then the terrifying part about that is the freight forwarder can't always get your dog on your flight, which means your dog who...
No.
Yeah. And I think like at the time that we did this, I think they were doing a thing where you're supposed to sedate the dog, but they've since changed that because it's rare that the sedation can last the whole time, which means the dog comes out of sedation, is freaked out,
and panics the hell. Yeah,
but But Callow got stuck at the freight forwarder for a couple of days. And so, you know, like the poor dog was stuck in the kennel for those couple of days. And then, you know, when you're receiving it, the flight's delayed. It was like a 10-hour wait between when she was supposed to be there and when she showed up. So, you know, that's exhausting and terrifying and expensive. Like at the end of the day, everything all in, and you know, I think we did this in 20 oh I know we did this in 2018.
Okay. Well,
it cost us just over, for all the shots and for that boarding and for the freight forwarding and everything, cost us just over $2,000 US.
$2,000.
Yeah. And the vast majority of that was the freight forwarder and the checking her and all of like all of that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I think if we had had a little puppy we could have carried on, I think we could have gotten out of that for just under a grand, maybe like $800 when you include that $600 stay at the, yeah.
I mean, that's still a significant investment in love, I guess.
Hey, we all invest. Well, everybody except you invests something in love, Chapa.
Hey, Lou, I'm going through a difficult time in my life. Okay, so chill.
Okay, sure. So, but my point is this. My point is, you know, it's feasible if you do fall in love with a dog, and I get it. I get it. And the people that we adopted her out to, Callow out to, like they're friends of ours. We get to see her every week, and she's just so grateful. And these dogs, you know, I hate. I'm gonna. It's a cliche, but you know, our dog. We've got a dog that we adopted who was homeless here, and she's a sweetheart. But I don't think she gets the sense like, oh yeah, I you know, like this is great, they saved me. Like, she feels sort of like she's entitled to our house. But Callow still treats me like a rock star. Like, oh, you're the guy who saved me, and you came and you brought me steak and you gave me belly rubs.
You know how much hate mail are we gonna get because this is the ultimate white savior statement?
No, it's not. What do you mean? What, how do you mean?
Well, like that you're feeling recognized by the dog.
Oh, I'm totally I don't feel recognized by my dog. Like, the dog who lives with me doesn't give me half the respect that I get from Callow.
Oh, no. I know. Like, I'm just saying that because sometimes for me, I've never lived with a dog. I there used to be 8 dogs in the glass studio where I used to work, and 2 cats, and It was always interesting to me, like the relationship that people have with dogs, and it's, you know, like at the beginning of a thing, like I saw sort of a very simple like gratification thing, mm-hmm. where dogs are very happy to see you, and more like, you know, if you're feeding a dog that lives in an industrial park that doesn't have any other way to get fed, they're going to be extremely happy to see you. But then I realized that it's not as simple. It's not as superficial. There's some serious love happening there that I was not aware of. So I was making a joke, but I do understand that it's not as superficial. It's just like, I feel great because that dog is acknowledging that I saved it.
Oh, I think it is. For me, it really is that simple.
Oh, Lord,
I know. I get so much.
Come on, Lou.
Oh no, I truly do. And I think that is the essence of the bond between dogs and humans is there really is that give and take. And, you know, there was this study I heard about this on some NPR station recently where, they were trying to figure out the intelligence level of different animals by putting them through these tests, giving them tools in order to perform the tests. And the assessment of their intelligence was based on their ability to utilize the tool. And dogs failed miserably in all of these tests because every time you put the tool in front of them, they would look at the person. And the human being who was talking about this test said that, in fact, that makes the dog the smartest of all the animals because the dog recognizes there is no better tool than a human, that the dog recognizes that these humans can do everything. So before you spend any time with these other tools, wait and see if the best tool can get this thing done for you.
Got it. Okay, so I guess the conclusion for this episode is that it is feasible to bring a dog bag as long as you have $2,000 to spare.
Or you get a really small dog. You know, the other thing that I'd also say is in 2008, when we first started visiting Oaxaca, as I say, we didn't see anybody walking dogs on leashes. And now, oh my goodness, every Sunday there's a group in Oaxaca who does a tour through Centro of their dogs on leashes that ends up at right in the just north of the Zocalo. I see so many people with dogs. And look, you and I do a lot of work in rural Mexico to try and help people. And it's easy to fall into that trap. And I do this all the time myself of, you know, what's more important is helping people or helping dogs. And, you know, I would every single time come down on the side of helping people is way more important than helping dogs. But I think that there's also, I think how we treat animals can be a barometer for how we treat each other. It's a barometer for empathy, in essence. So, you know, it can be easy to point to something like, yeah, this guy spent $2,000 to bring a dog back from Mexico. You don't have dogs in Chicago. And obviously we do. But I do an awful lot of work to help people as well. But when I see this dog who, you know, and I feed, as you say, I feed a lot of dogs, hot dogs and bacon when I'm on these trips. I do a lot for dogs, and I see a lot of dogs that need help. But when you see a dog who speaks to you in this specific way, who says to you, I really want to be your dog. Even though we knew that dog couldn't be our dog, we knew that dog was ready to be somebody's dog. And that's something I can't turn away from.
Wow. Yeah, I unfortunately cannot. I don't have a lot of capacity to understand this. But
on the next trip, we'll get you a dog and then you'll learn.
Yeah, no, not happening. I first need a plant. that doesn't die. But yeah, I don't know, Lou. Like it's, I fundamentally agree. I guess my only follow-up question, and I'm not going to do it because we need to finish this episode now, but it's maybe it's cheaper if you drive the dog back. How about that idea?
You know what? Actually, it's a very good question. I'm not sure. I guess I didn't investigate truckers. I just can't imagine keeping a dog in a truck for
you in a car. Well, that's also a pain. Okay, no, never mind. So, ladies and gentlemen and others, if you want to bring a dog you want to get a dog to United States from here, Mexico, there you go. That is your guy.
Okay. Catch you next episode, Chava.
See ya, bato.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food
world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Out.